you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This podcast is sponsored by Berkeley Books and their new psychological thriller, Somebody's Daughter, by best-selling author David Bell. We follow Michael, a man who has only 12 hours to save the life of a missing girl, a girl who may or may not be his own daughter.
Ooh.
When a decade-old secret comes to light, he'll have to uncover the truth before time runs out, leading to a shocking ending that you'll never see coming, John.
I have to get this book.
Well, Somebody's Daughter is actually available July 10th, and you can start reading an excerpt of this twist filled ride now at prh.com/David Bell. Is this thing on?
Hey. Looks like we've got a hot mic here.
Oh, a hot mic. Oh, I feel like Robert Durst, where I could confess to a murder and then no one would know, and Maggie would be like, oh, hot mic.
And then burp at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But also be in the toilet.
Right. Please do all that things.
That's where my major thinking comes from, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, I really sit down. Yeah, Robert Durst, like, on a toilet burping.
Got it.
Do you feel more attracted or less attracted to me?
Way less.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
But that means you were attracted to me at one point?
I don't think this is the time or place,
Darren. Moving on. Oh, okay.
Well, anyway, how was your 4th of July?
It was good, and I wanted to say we're both kind of in blue. I mean, yours is a blue-green. It's really a teal.
It's very blue nublar, if you think
it's
about it.
It's very blue nublar.
Which was a drink I recently created.
And Megan noticed today that I looked, I'm going to go out on a limb and say bright and funny.
Well, typically you're wearing black.
Yeah, I added those adjectives in.
Yeah.
But I'm wearing a nice bright blue blazer
with a black shirt
that I borrowed from my girlfriend.
Hey, that's one good thing about being in a gay relationship.
Double the wardrobe.
We all share each other's clothes. That's amazing.
So 4th of July, we're recording this the day after.
Yeah.
I went rafting down the Delaware River.
How was it?
It was fucking fun, man.
Yeah.
It's so good to do. And
now, this isn't like whitewater rafting, is it?
No, and we were joking that like every time we hit a rapid, but it's literally just like boop.
Yeah,
and, like,
we
were just joking. Although we did hit a rock and I flew out of my seat, not into the water, which was like my girlfriend peed her pants. Like, she couldn't contain herself. She was laughing so hard she couldn't raft the entire way back. But it's like lazy river rafting.
Yeah.
So you can paddle. You don't have to paddle.
We brought
some beers.
Anything
I made
with lazy,
sandwiches.
Anything with lazy in the title, I'm
you're
into
in?
It. Yes.
Okay.
What kind of sandwiches?
Well, my girl's a veg, so I had to give her a little tofurkey.
Got
some cheese, lettuce, spicy
Sounds
mustard.
Good, honestly.
It was actually very decent. I had regular turkey because I'm, you know, normal.
Matt's a veg, aren't you?
Are you a veg?
I'm a pescatarian.
Okay, that's what she is, a pescatarian.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She can't go full throttle.
Yeah, that's tough to do.
Well, fish is so light and good.
And delish.
It is delish. What did you do for the 4th?
Well, I had shrimp skewers, first of all.
Oh.
Yeah, so speaking of fish.
That's it?
That's it. That's how I spent my
4th
of
July.
No, I had friends over to our apartment. My boyfriend made a whole bunch of delicious food, and the sangria that is maybe still in my system, I think that's why I'm a little bit like dizzy today. So if I pass out or fall over in my chair, that's why. And you should come pick
me
up.
Are you trying to set up an excuse not to drink today? Because Matt had his drinking hat on.
No.
Megan has hers on.
I'm ready for another drink, honestly.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hair of the dog.
The tides have turned.
Matt the bartender, I hope he's listening.
That's what the show is doing to him.
I know.
It's changing.
Double for the young lady over here.
I know. The sangria had Malibu in it, by the way.
Oh.
It was so good.
You and Malibu
I know.
And an like an Irish coffee. You are living for the sweet drink.
Live my life.
Yes.
And then, but then this was, so we had a little like get together and then we walked down to a great view of the East River fireworks here. The Macy's fireworks here in New York City are like the craziest fireworks of all time.
I thought of you because I figured you would have a good view because my girlfriend's on the water as well in Brooklyn.
Yeah, that's right.
We literally walked out of her apartment and 5 minutes later we were right there, which was great.
That's what we did as well. But
they were fun, but you ever notice how like everyone has their phone out and is taking a video of the fireworks? And I turn to my girlfriend and I go, tell me how many different firework pictures you can possibly have. Has anyone ever looked back at firework photos?
No.
I mean, I get it. You capture the moment once, you have a great view. But like, do you need 500 taking? I don't understand this.
Or that, or when you're just like taking a, like sitting there taking a video of the entire show.
Why?
I'm like, why? They all look the same.
Everything is the same.
That has ever went off
looks exactly the same.
So
it wasn't like it spelled cool things in the sky. I mean,
right,
okay, they have happy faces sometimes.
Yeah.
But like,
and to
please,
and to these people's credit, in the New York City East River fireworks, there are literally four barges that go off with the, at the same time,
identical,
and that looks so cool, especially from a distance where you can see all four of them. But again,
one pic,
keep the photos away, live in the moment.
But like one picture,
it's enough.
You don't need to hold up the phone for 45 minutes.
Thank you.
Tell me how many people look back at their firework pictures.
Not I.
We are getting crabby in our old
age.
We are getting very crabby. We're getting drunk and crabby.
A story about the 4th of July that does have a crime related angle to it.
Okay, we'll let you speak this time.
So it's not just us venting. Please do take this away.
So, okay, my mom used to be a police officer. Did you know that?
I did, yeah.
Your mom is so fascinating.
And didn't we kind of coordinate that she was potentially a police officer at the same time?
Yeah, I did know this.
The Golden State Killer.
East Area Rapist. Yes. That's right.
Close.
Yeah, nearby at least. Yeah.
So, she got a call on the 4th of July, and at this time, my brothers were older than I am, and she felt
Well, they're always going to be older than you if they were born before you.
They didn't. Thank you, Darren.
You're welcome. Just making sure we all are aware of how age works.
I'm saying this because I was too little to really remember. I knew where you were going, and I felt I didn't want to harass you, but Darren went ahead and did it. You're welcome.
I mean, you have a rep to protect.
Okay, so let me finish the fucking story. So my mom felt bad because they didn't have a whole lot of money at that time, and they didn't get the brothers very many fireworks. They didn't really have much to light or whatever.
Right.
So she gets this call that some kids are setting off like M80s and stuff, you know, like they're like little bombs, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah. Like
and
grenades.
So she goes and there's like a whole bunch of M80s and like illegal fireworks, basically confiscates it and goes and gives it to my brothers.
Oh my God. So
one man's trash is another man's treasure.
I mean, did they survive?
Yeah.
Yeah, they survived good.
Although, as we know, you had an eye injury from fireworks, so maybe you shouldn't be setting off M80s. Maybe Matt's mom should not be gifting you these
potentially
things.
I also do. I'm glad you brought this up because I talked about this on another shot. A whole bunch of fans in our Facebook group were like, John, we figured out your eye problem. They're called floaters. And apparently they're these, like you know, you get a floater here and there, which is exactly what I was talking about, except like it hasn't quite gone away. So that's why I'm a little bit nervous about what exactly
which
it
is also kind of a good murder term because like floating bodies,
right.
It's a floater.
I love the segue.
I'm just relating it all back. Our fans are the fucking best.
Well, basically what I'm asking is I need the fans to be our doctors.
I'm happy
and
with
so
that.
So here we are.
They're MDs.
Exactly.
They're
yes.
all MDs. Well, we must move on from this.
Let's get into the actual murder as much as we would love to just air out our grievances.
I just
want
to first say, thank you to PR Daily, actually, because as some of you have seen and you have actually put up, PR Daily's digital PR and social media awards, we won best podcast.
So
I just wanted to say thank you so much. Matt sent it to us, and I think the best part about that whole article was at the end when it was like thanking the whole production, and it said Matt the bartender in parentheses, no kidding, which was really just so sweet. Those are like people who definitely listen to the show. And just thank you, PR Daily.
Yeah, I love when we win an award. We've won a few in our day already.
We need to win more.
We should.
But I'm okay with waiting until like the real right moment.
Well, let's get rid of this guy and then we'll actually see if we get a chance to win.
I'm thirsty.
I'm thirsty. Matt, what are we drinking? I was jumping right into the murder.
I was like, hello.
There's no theme at all. We're drinking margaritas because I felt like drinking a margarita.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
This is Matt's podcast now.
Oh, wow. Matt runs the
show. Megan threw her hands up in the air. She was like, oh, Jesus.
I'm also, I kind of made up my own recipe.
Oh, great.
It's similar. They're also similar, right? Uh-huh. I don't really like triple sec.
Okay.
And margaritas, but this one's going to have 2 ounces of tequila, 1/2 ounce of Contro, 1/2 ounce of simple syrup, and a bunch of Tersh Burns of fresh lime.
I was just going to ask.
We need a term for ounce. Once.
We need to one day really sit down and measure out what exactly a Tersh Burn is so that only our fans know. One last anecdote. I was talking to Matt in his office the other day, and one of our colleagues came in, and she's in the Facebook group. She knows about what's going on. She doesn't listen to the show every week, but she goes,
bitch.
By the way,
such a bitch.
You know who this is. I'll tell you
what. Of course I do.
She's the worst. Just kidding. Love you.
Yeah.
She would love that.
She's not listening to this episode, so it doesn't matter.
That's why I said that. But she comes in and she goes, by the way, what is a Tersh Burn? And I was like,
look it up,
bitch. It's episode 80 or whatever it was. Not 80.
Can we get that on Urban Dictionary?
We need to definitely like get things
going. We need to have a cocktail book.
Yeah.
And then everything is just given in Tersh Burns. And it's just like, you do whatever measurement you want.
Are you listening, Random House? Yeah. Are you listening, Penguin? We want a recipe book.
God damn it.
By the way, that would be an amazing idea.
I know.
We should do that.
Thank you.
I feel like Megan knows somebody. She always
knows
someone. So Megan, can you help us out with this?
She just closed her eyes and nodded.
Like she's like, I got you.
She's like, please shut up. I'm already 10 steps ahead. She already wrote it and found it.
Yeah. One time we were literally talking about something and Megan was like, oh, I actually have a document full of contact information. Like, we were like,
I made it for you. I was like, oh.
So why we keep her around and Matt not around, which is why he left.
Let's hope we pay her. Yeah.
Let's hope so. Let's get into this week's murder. Fingers crossed, Megan says. All right. So we're going to be talking about the murder of Sarah Tokars. We believe that's the best pronunciation. Hopefully we're not offending anybody. But
yeah, I'm a major toker.
Yeah, you definitely get it. This is your show.
This is a show.
So who were the Tokars? Sarah M. Brusco was born on June 28th, 1953, and grew up in a large Catholic family in Buffalo, New York.
All right.
Just recently visited Buffalo. Lovely city.
Is it?
It is, actually. Yeah.
I feel like it's nice now, but not in winter.
Hell no.
Yeah.
I could never imagine living there in the winter.
No way.
The middle girl of 7 daughters, Sarah had an idyllic childhood, according to her sister, Joni.
Imagine that, Dad.
I know.
7
That's
daughters?
That's a lot of kids.
That's a harem.
We've talked about this before, and the fans were like, I'm 7th of 14
I know,
kids.
And I'm like, but one gender.
Oh, yeah, yeah, right. Oh, that's true. Joni told Oxygen's Deadly Power that Sarah was the trailblazer of the family. Sarah even convinced her parents to let her attend public school and became a cheerleader while the rest of her sisters remained in private school.
Badass.
Which is really interesting if you think about 7 kids going, you know, 6 of them going to one school and 1 going to the other.
Yeah.
That just feels
especially
so weird
the middle
to me.
Kid. You'd think it'd be like the youngest being like, I don't want to do what they want to do.
Right. After graduation, Sarah made her way to Colorado for college, and then a teaching job took her to Florida. There's so much drama in Florida. All kinds of crazy things going on. I love Florida, but you guys have some crazy crime going on down
there. It's
nuts. There she met an Atlanta health club owner on the beach. The two hit it off and got married in 1981. After moving to Atlanta with her new husband, Sarah settled in quickly and began teaching aerobics at her husband's club, which was frequented by members of the Atlanta Falcons and local nightclub investors.
You know the Atlanta Falcons are an NFL team, right, John?
I love sports ball. Yeah,
I know
great.
You love things with
I love
balls.
To just kick a ball, do sports.
You do.
Sarah's outgoing personality and adventurous spirit led her to the city's bustling nightclub scene where she did PR and marketing work. And though Sarah's career seemed to be taking off, her marriage, on the other hand, was suffering. According to Deadly Power, the young couple was fighting constantly, and though Sarah tried hard to save the relationship, they ended up getting a divorce. So newly single at 30, Sarah was living with her sister Chrissy and taking time to focus on herself when she saw a familiar face on the local news, Fred Tokars, an up-and-coming junior prosecutor who was assisting in a murder trial. So this is getting juicy.
It is getting juicy.
By the way, Let me just say one thing.
You're thirsty too?
I'm thirsty too, number one. Would love to get a drink, Matt. We're halfway through. It's fine. I would love for everyone to understand that after you get out of a serious relationship, just take a breath.
You need a little, you need a beat.
You don't need to be running into a new relationship. Mentally, it is just not healthy to be doing that. And that's my advice of the day.
We need to have like John advice music.
Oh, yeah. We need like a little like triangle sound.
Something that like brings it down.
Let's see. Let's do that. Anyway, Sarah's sister Karen had dated Fred's younger brother during high school back in Buffalo. Fred was now working for the district attorney's office and had gained a reputation for putting away the bad guys. Enamored by his newfound success, Sarah called Fred to catch up and he asked her out on a date. She immediately fell for the driven and ambitious prosecutor.
This is like 80s Tinder.
It really is.
Seeing like an old friend on TV and calling them up.
It really is.
Yeah.
Like using like a rotary phone to be like, hi, would you like to go on a date?
Yeah, without an area code because there's only seven numbers back then.
Oh my God, that's right. Just saying. I forgot about that. Like I said, she immediately fell for this very driven... Thank you, Matt, for this very driven and ambitious prosecutor. And according to her sister, Joni, Sarah believed Fred would be a good husband and father to her future children.
That's a nice compliment.
That's nice. Less than a year after their first date, Sarah and Fred got married in July of 1985. The couple moved into a sprawling home in East Cobb, an affluent suburb about 40 miles outside of Atlanta. Shortly after, Sarah's dream of having a family came true. She gave birth to her first son, Rick, in 1986. Shout out to the 86er club out there in the
world.
Shout
out to Ricks.
To Ricks out there. Hey, yeah. Ricks. No one's named Rick anymore. No one names their kid
Rick. I
have an
uncle Rick.
Well, uncles, of course. Right. But newborns, but not so much.
But yeah, like, I guess Richard.
Oh, that's true.
You know, but then, you know, sometimes they just go by Dick.
That's true.
Yes. People in your circles are going by that.
Right, by that.
Right. No one's going by Rick.
No, that's true. Mm-mm.
On Monday nights, CNBC's new series, Deadly Rich, reveals the criminal side of wealth. Deadly Rich covers high-profile, high-net-worth crimes, exposing people who have everything and who will stop at nothing to get more. Yep, the rich do everything different. Even murder.
The series premiere investigates the killing of Ben Novak Jr. You remember him because we just did an episode on him. Remember, he's the son of the man who built the famous Fontainebleau Hotel in Miami Beach. When Ben's brutally murdered body is found in a New York hotel room, the police investigation reveals a lot more than just the killer.
It's a twisted story of secret lust, cruel confessions, and a devious desire for millions. Don't miss the series premiere of Deadly Rich, Monday, 10 p.m. Eastern on CNBC.
Sarah became a house. We could have gone really off the rails.
You cut it off and I cut it off and we moved.
Back to the show. Sarah became a housewife and Fred's career continued to flourish. Fred's college friend told Deadly Power, quote, they just seemed like they had a great relationship. They were like Ken and Barbie, end quote.
Is that how we define?
I know.
Because those are plastic toys.
With like weird looking body parts,
like,
no less.
But like there's no genitalia.
No.
So no wonder they have a good relationship because Ken's not trying to fill her boobs.
Yeah. It's all just hanging out and going in the Barbie dream house.
Exactly. Well, actually, I'm wrong. That sounds like an idyllic marriage.
While Sarah stayed at home, Fred decided to leave his assistant district attorney position and go into private practice, which soon proved to be an extremely lucrative move.
Oh.
I am having mental problems. With an aptitude in tax law and accounting, Fred struck up partnerships with many local businesses in Atlanta. Sarah's social connections from her PR and marketing days also helped Fred's business grow. So this sounds like a great little partnership here.
Seems nice.
Everything seems to be connecting up there. According to the former Cobb County DA, Fred was also a part-time judge and had an in with the court system and the political structure of Atlanta.
Which usually says to me, corruption?
Yeah, there's something going on there.
I'm going to let it, you know, we'll see.
Let's see how it plays out.
Oh, finally.
Oh, wow. Oh, this actually looks really nice and refreshing.
Yes, yes.
It's like a white...
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
It's like a white drink. Okay, that's all I can say about it. In 1988, Sarah gave birth to her second son, Mike. By this time, Fred's client list had grown exponentially, and from the outside, the Tokers looked like the perfect family.
Matt's sipping it before we cheers.
So rude.
Oh, we wanted to taste it. Can we cheers so I can get to my part?
Yes. Cheers.
Cheers, bitch.
All right.
Happy 4th.
Happy 4th of July. I'm a little hungover today, but it's fine.
For someone who doesn't like tequila, that's actually very refreshing. It kind of tastes like
good.
It looks like lemonade.
That's exactly what it looks like.
As opposed to white drink, which is how you described it. Drink. Yeah, but we'll move
on. That's fine. We
hashtag
all have our different
white drink.
Hashtag white drink. It's fine.
Okay, so while Fred took on many high-profile clients, some were a bit more notorious, we'd say, rather than famous. Mm-hmm. Fred's friend told Deadly Power, quote, "There's no doubt that the clients that he was representing were unscrupulous. He was a criminal defense lawyer. He was defending criminals," end quote. Though Sarah relished in her husband's success, she was worried about her husband's involvement in Atlanta's criminal underworld. Fred's clients usually paid in cash, and because of that, according to Atlanta Magazine, Sarah was afraid he was representing people who had been charged with dealing drugs.
I was just going to say, the whole like paying in cash thing, even in the 80s
or 90s. Under the table, never.
Not a good thing.
It's usually dirty play.
Right.
Instead of putting away the bad guys, Fred was actually defending them. Sarah's fears came to a head when 3-year-old Rick found a pistol under the passenger seat floor board in Fred's car.
Oh my God.
Could you fucking imagine being anyone, let alone a parent of a 3-year-old, finding a gun?
Gun, yeah.
My God, Joni said, quote, "It was just really alarming to her. There were just these red flags going up. She was worried about the little ones," end quote. You know how on another shot a couple weeks ago we were talking about like red flags in a relationship?
Yeah.
Finding a gun, maybe just like under the floorboard of a car.
That was not previously told to you that
or
was
like
there.
Registered. Like that could be like a red flag.
Right. I would say
that's a red flag.
Thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome. Wanting to protect her son, Sarah told Fred she wanted a divorce.
Mm.
Fred, however, wouldn't let Sarah leave him and destroy his facade of their perfect life. Remember Ken and Barbie here. He's got an image to protect. So to gain back control of the home, Fred took over the family's finances. He put Sarah on a strict allowance and made her ask permission for any additional spending, which seems like a massive control issue to me.
And never ends well.
Whenever Sarah asked about their finances, Fred refused to talk about it. He even allegedly banned her from going into the basement where his safe was located.
Mm.
Another red flag. Around this time, Fred allegedly began to physically abuse Sarah, according to Atlanta attorney who knew Sarah. Fred's own attorney later denied this allegation, so it's kind of hard to know.
Yeah.
Certainly, I think the control and having your ask for things seems like a form of emotional abuse, but, you know, depends on how she describes it.
Yeah.
Tension in their relationship swelled when Sarah suspected Fred of having extramarital affairs. But Sarah believed Fred's indiscretions were the perfect leverage to get Fred to consent to their divorce. She consulted a divorce attorney who remembered that Sarah was, quote, "extremely concerned about her children, more so than anything else. She was certainly fearful for a number of reasons, physically and mentally fearful. I think it took some courage for her to come," end quote. Of course it did, though, because this guy's paying for a lot of stuff. There's children
their
with
kids,
him, you know. Yeah. Sarah then hired a private detective, Ralph Perdomo, to investigate Fred and gather the evidence she needed. Joni told Deadly Power, quote, "She was convinced if the private investigator found some evidence about it, she would be able to get a divorce and get the boys out of there," end quote, which seems like a perfect solution.
Well, imagine being in a relationship where you have to hire a private detective.
Good.
Like, now that's when you know it's not a good scenario to be in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, something's wrong with your marriage if you feel like you got to do that.
Totally.
Perdomo followed Fred to an apartment complex near the Toker's home. About 15 minutes after Fred caught sight of Perdomo parked outside, a patrolman came up to Perdomo's car and asked what he was doing. Perdomo believed Fred had called one of his law enforcement contacts to have him removed from the premises. Remember, he's got a lot of political sway here. After she found out Fred was being unfaithful, Sarah again asked him for a divorce. Perdomo later explained to Atlanta Magazine that Fred told her if she ever tried to leave, this is a quote, told her if she ever tried to leave, he would take the kids from her, that he had the political contacts and the judicial contacts to do it. She was very, very, very intimidated by him.
Well,
end quote.
Of course.
What
can she really do in this scenario?
And it seems, you know, from outsiders, she cares more about her kids than anything.
Yeah.
Like, this is huge
for
her.
Which is good, yeah.
Yes. Determined to break free of her husband, Sarah did some digging of her own. According to Joni, Sarah got the combination to Fred's basement safe and came across some startling documents, which, by the way, if you have to like dig for a code and find something, you're never gonna find anything good.
Well, especially in the 80s before there was like Facebook and
it's not
Google.
Gonna be like love notes I just forgot to send my wife,
right?
Like, it's bad shit. So she found summaries for offshore bank accounts totaling hundreds of thousands of dollars. No wonder he's not talking to her about her finances.
Right.
Sarah then contacted Perdomo to come out to the house and look at the safe. Perdomo said Sarah wanted him to take the documents and make copies to figure out what her husband was really involved in, but he actually refused to investigate further and told Sarah to make her own copies and give them to someone she trusted. So keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Sarah then asked Perdomo to give his own investigation findings over to the police if anything happened to her.
Oh
so she's super scared for her life.
Yeah.
According to the former Cobb County DA, quote, from what he saw from the documents, Perdomo was concerned Fred was involved with a lot more than the normal divorce issues, end quote. I mean, right?
Clearly.
Being shady, he's got a safe of hundreds of thousands of dollars of offshore banking. It's
that
not looking
she
good.
She didn't even know about.
Right.
In a marriage, yeah.
Afraid she would lose her children if she confronted Fred, Sarah decided not to ask for a divorce. According to Sarah's attorney, no one could guarantee that she would retain full custody of her two sons. And that's clearly a risk she wasn't willing to take. She cares about her children more than anything.
Yeah.
Though the relationship continued to get worse, Sarah suffered in silence. Still anxious about her husband's business dealings, she urged Fred to have a home alarm system installed. Okay?
Okay.
Sarah also asked him to fix a broken kick on their sliding glass door, but apparently neither of them had it repaired.
Yeah, and you know, we're just talking a little bit about how she's sort of like, it's not Stockholm syndrome, but she feels very trapped in this relationship.
She's anxious for sure about what could happen.
And it's so heartbreaking because, you know, we've all heard these stories, not just from the 80s, but all through
countless times.
Yeah, and it's just such a shitty situation for women especially to be in when they feel completely helpless, especially when kids are involved.
Yeah.
Well, 2 days before Thanksgiving in 1992, Sarah and the boys drove to Florida to spend the holiday with her family. Fred flew down from Atlanta to meet them. That Saturday, the Togar Security Company called to inform them that a fire alarm had gone off, but no fire had occurred.
So it seems a little jank.
Yeah.
A little janky.
Hours later, the company called again and said a second alarm had gone off. The couple decided to have the alarm disconnected.
Which, if anyone has ever seen This Is Us on NBC, you should know not to do this and always have proper batteries
there
in
you
your
go.
Alarm.
And no spoilers
and
there.
And your smoke detector.
Exactly.
I just have to say, this is the most disgusting margarita I've ever made in my
life. Really?
I don't like it.
Well, you're the bartender.
Like
make a new one.
You know what?
You're disgusted by yourself.
I need a different tequila, number one.
The tequila's strong on this.
So,
what'd you use?
That's...
Cheap
I wasn't going to say the name of the brand because I'm shitting all over it.
And maybe
one person shitting on it, three of us are
very
much so having a great
time.
I
don't mind mine, actually.
I don't even like tequila and I'm having a good time.
Okay, good.
By the way, super tan?
He's just red.
You look really tan. Yeah. I just noticed.
Well, I've been gardening a lot.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my God.
And the reindeer head?
Of course.
Yeah.
Really is an LGBT podcast.
By the way, if you see a reindeer walking around a garden, it's likely Matt.
Yeah.
So FYI.
But he's frolicking.
He's frolicking.
He's frolicking
exactly.
In gardens.
Could you? I'm just like picturing him like
I imagine
actually
him like,
doing
boop,
this.
Boop, with like little hooves like hanging over the gate.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Like, ooh.
anyway, back to this. Yes, Matt, let us know if you get an update on your drink, a new recipe. We'll announce it on the show.
Okay.
Maybe you put too many Tershburns of tequila in it.
Oh, not enough.
If you're a dedicator, you're probably a huge true crime nerd just like us.
As you know, Oxygen Network is all about true crime and has just launched a new AR app called Forensic Detective, which is perfect for all of our armchair detective fans who want a chance to break out their sleuthing skills and immerse themselves in crime solving on a whole new level.
The app uses augmented reality so you can project a crime scene around your room. It's so much fun. It lets you hunt for clues, use forensic tools to get up close and analyze evidence, listen to suspect statements, all the elements of solving a case.
It's super cool, and it's just the beginning. This is a brand new app, and there's only one case to solve right now, but hopefully Oxygen will make many more.
If you want to check it out, you can download it today on your iPhone or iPad. Fred left Florida later that day. So again, the couple decided to have the alarm disconnected.
Right.
Fred left Florida later that day to return to Atlanta before heading to Montgomery, Alabama to meet a client in prison.
Another red flag.
On Sunday, November 29th, 1992, Sarah and the boys drove back home to East Cobb. Minutes after they pulled out of the driveway, Fred called to see what time they would be home. His father-in-law told him 9:30 or 10 p.m. Shortly after 10 p.m., Sarah and the boys pulled into their garage. The oldest son, Rick, told Deadly Power that his little brother, Mike, was asleep in the back seat.
All these details in mind about who's asking for what
and
time frames.
They left him so they could unload the car, but when they entered the house, a man was standing inside with a sawed-off shotgun.
Which has to be the scariest weapon out there. Right? A sawed off shot. Like,
I would say.
You're not there's no self defense with a sawed off shotgun. Like, you are meant to fucking terrorize
next
with that.
Next to, like, a canister of spiders, though.
Well, that's a different. That's warfare. Yeah, that's unleash something
warfare.
Different. I'm not saying that no, all guns aren't threatening, but it feels threatening to me.
It feels very violent.
Yes.
I mean, especially at point blank. I mean, you, like,
right.
People,
he's just standing
like,
there, right?
Their faces are gone.
Oh, that just gave me chills.
And as far as we know, this person did not have hooves. So it can't be Matt necessarily.
All we can say is there were no reports. That doesn't mean there weren't hooves.
Well, we don't know. We don't know.
There were no deer droppings outside.
Yes.
We don't know.
And if we know Matt, there would be.
There would be. He forced, back to this inside of this scary house with
sawed-off
shotgun. He forced Sarah and the 6-year-old Rick back into the car. The man sat in the back seat next to 4-year-old Mike, who was still sleeping.
God.
Pointing the shotgun to Sarah's back, he ordered her to drive. About half a mile from the Toker's house, the man ordered her to drive down a side street. Instead, Sarah pulled to the side of the road. Rick remembered that the man said, quote, "Why are you trying to fuck with me?" End quote. Sarah responded, "I'm not trying to fuck with you." By the way, this sounds like a conversation you hear on the subway.
Yeah, exactly.
Sarah begged for her and her son's lives, saying, quote, "You can take the car, just don't hurt me or my children," end quote. The man then put the shotgun to Sarah's head and shot her point blank.
Oh my God.
Rick remembered the man got out of the car and fled. Sarah was slumped over the wheel and the car, still in drive, rolled across the road and stopped in a field.
Imagine the kids. I know you're about to get to it, but just like, oh my God.
Well, Rick leaned over his mom and turned off the ignition. Remember, he's just a young boy.
Yeah.
He told Deadly Power he pushed his mom back into the seat and said, "Mom, wake up, wake up." Mike said, "Mommy, you can't die on us now."
These are 4 and 6-year-old little boys.
Yeah, imagine that.
Doing this.
Rick then took his little brother from the back seat and they ran to a nearby house for help. Imagine being this young and knowing that you have to do this stuff.
Of course.
The neighbors called 911 and the police arrived on the scene and contacted Fred in Alabama. From what Rick could remember, the man who killed his mother was a black male. The boys were then taken to Fred's brother's house while they waited for their father to come home. Detectives then made their way to the Toker's home. The former Cobb County DA told Deadly Power that the sliding glass door leading to the patio was opened and unlocked, and drawers in the master bedroom had been opened and jewelry laid out.
So that seems to be a stage for a robbery.
Exactly. Though initially believed to be a burglary gone wrong, a former Cobb County detective told Deadly Power, quote, "We found that Sarah had been shot and killed with a 410 shotgun. No burglar is going to come in a house armed with a sawed-off 410 shotgun. The whole thing just stunk to high heaven. The scene looked like it was staged, made it look like a burglary. It wasn't torn up. It wasn't rummaged through. It didn't make sense. This thing is not a burglary gone bad," end quote.
So it definitely seems like foul play of some sort.
Yeah.
So let's get into the investigation.
I just have to say, that poor kid. I mean, both of them.
But the older one will have memories. Yeah. Is
what I'm thinking is the younger one, this might be his first memory.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh, God,
like,
you're so right about that.
Because I think about 4 is when you really kind of start remembering.
Right.
Yeah. What's your earliest memory? Do you know what your earliest memory is?
I actually have an extremely early memory
Me
of
too.
Being in my crib.
Me too. That's what I was going to
When it
say.
Was thundering and lightning and calling for my parents. So
oh
I was
God.
Like an infant.
The one thing, Matt, I want to know what yours is if you happen to remember. He'll be like, "I was hanging out with Jesus."
It
was really
me and Jesus.
I don't know if it's real or not.
Oh, okay.
But I believe that I have a memory of being bathed in a sink.
Oh my God. That's even earlier than I would say mine.
I don't
know
if
the only time I can remember.
In my mind. I don't, you know, but even when I was little, I thought that I remembered that.
Yeah.
And I remember my parents saying, "No, you don't. There's no way you could remember that." But
that's what my mom
felt that I remembered it, so I don't know.
I had one, and we'll get to the next section in a second just to break it up a bit. But the earliest one I have, I don't remember how old I would have been. But I remember the layout of an apartment that my mom and dad shared.
Oh.
And I remember explaining, I was like, "Mom, where did we live when we had this big TV that had the lights around it? I remember those lights." And she was like, "That would have been under... 1.5 years old, because that was when she was living with my dad.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
But isn't that crazy? Like 1.5? That's insane.
And who knew that that memory would just like plant in your brain?
I know.
It's like just, it's very fascinating.
And I remember watching The Price is Right, and she was like, yeah, you were obsessed with the wheel because of the noise that it makes. And every time you would hear it, you would run up to the TV, and I was getting these memories. And she was like, but we only lived there like in 1987. You couldn't have been more than 2 years old. So it's just weird.
That's weird, but game show related.
Do you both remember the first person you ever murdered?
I do.
Still have a lock of their hair.
We're going to save that for a special
episode. That's another shot.
It's our 100th episode. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Convinced this was more than attempted robbery, police began investigating if Fred had any disgruntled clients, which would make sense because he wasn't necessarily repping the right great people. Let's put it that way. During an interview with police, Fred said the police he represented, quote, were all scumbags. They had done bad things and they would say things to me, but I never felt in my heart that there was someone who would hurt me or my family, end quote. Around this time, Sarah's sister Chrissy brought detectives some shocking evidence, photocopies of the documents Sarah had found in Fred's safe. So Sarah actually followed the private detective's advice, which proved to be this is good later on. So Joni told Deadly Power, Sarah said to Chrissy, quote, hang on to these, and if anything ever happens to me, just make sure you take them to the police. So really having that foresight of knowing that it was going to be a little bit dangerous was very, very smart on Sarah's part. It also came to light that Sarah had drawn up a new and final will a few months after giving birth to Mike. She had left all of her property to Rick and Mike and never mentioned Fred by name. So she fucking knew something was up.
Yeah.
After receiving Fred's documents, police realized their murder investigation was bigger than Cobb County. The FBI had already been digging into Fred's business dealings in connection with money laundering in Atlanta nightclubs. A former Cobb County detective said, quote, Fred represented criminals. Most of them were dope dealers. Fred would set up these clubs and then help them with the money laundering operation. He would tell them how to do it, end quote. Though the FBI investigation shed a suspicious light on Fred, police didn't have any leads on Sarah's murder. Sarah's family and friends then set up a $50,000 reward for information. 3 weeks after Sarah's murder, police finally got their first tip. Someone told them that one of Fred's business associates, Eddie Lawrence, had been looking to hire a hitman, according to the Los Angeles Times. So this seems like a very good lead.
Yeah.
Eddie was eventually introduced to Curtis Rower, a 23-year-old ex-convict and addict. The SWAT team came to the Atlanta house where Curtis was staying, and they found him hiding under the bed, which usually isn't a good sign. Although he is an ex-convict, so maybe that was just a natural instinct or
who knows.
They arrested Curtis and brought him back to the Cobb County Police Station, where he admitted to killing Sarah Tokers. Curtis had opened up about Eddie Lawrence and confirmed that he had hired him to murder Sarah. So this is all finally falling into place.
Yeah.
Eddie was arrested shortly after Curtis's confession. During his interview with police, Eddie said he had no involvement in Sarah's murder or helping to arrange it. He did, however, open up about Fred and their business relationship. According to the former Cobb County DA, Eddie first met Fred when he came to him as a client. Fred hit it off with the con man and decided to become business partners with him. Con men, you can, everyone deserves a second chance. So just because you did something young and stupid doesn't necessarily mean maybe you've learned. So
yeah, maybe
it does sound fishy in this scenario, but not in all scenarios.
Right.
The former DA said,
what have you done in your past that you're defending this?
Sometimes you can convince three fucking dumbasses to do a podcast with you, even though you've murdered people. So give people a chance.
Here we are.
The former DA said, quote, Fred was actually financing Eddie in several businesses, a real estate business, a home improvement business, an accounting business, end quote. He also revealed to police that he owed Fred more than $70,000.
I knew that was coming at some point.
This all really relates back to money.
Yeah.
Eddie refused to disclose any more information. He was held in jail for writing bad checks. Shortly following their arrest, Fred takes his sons to Florida to celebrate Christmas with Sarah's family. On December 23rd, police announced the arrests of Curtis and Eddie. At the Ambrusco home, Sarah's family immediately asked Fred how his business partner was involved in Sarah's murder. You know, it's Link and Fred here, because why? You know,
right.
Joni told the Los Angeles Times, quote, I was just screaming at Fred. This was your business partner. And goddamn, how could this be? What happened? Tell it to me. End quote. She said Fred brushed her off and downplayed Eddie's arrest with the rest of the family, saying, quote, I don't know anything. I'm too upset to talk, which just seems like a really easy excuse. Yeah. Fred took his sons and went back to their hotel for the night.
I mean, con men being bamboozled.
Listen, this is your sister-in-law asking why, how this could all be related, and you're just too tired to talk and you don't want to, you're too upset.
Yeah.
Please, wouldn't you just be as concerned?
Yes, Darren's fired up right now on this show. I love it.
I'm just saying.
No, I love it. But I'm saying, you know, con man, being bamboozled, money laundering. These are all words that sound very familiar in the news if you've been following along with some of the popular politicians of the world. So
bigly.
Yeah, very bigly news.
Yeah, Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, good job, Matt.
Oh, no.
Way to participate.
So the day after the arrests were made public, the Ambrusco family came to Fred's hotel room to take the boys to Busch Gardens. Love Busch Gardens. Been there when I was a kid with my dad. It was a lot of fun.
Oh.
Fred told them he didn't feel like going anymore and stayed behind. According to the Los Angeles Times, when the family left, Fred locked himself in the room, quote, propped a chair against the door and took an overdose of tranquilizers, washing it down with cans of beer, end quote.
Sounds like a Friday night to me.
Worried about his son-in-law, Sarah's father called the hotel to check in on him. When Fred didn't answer, he called the police and went back to the hotel. Police broke down Fred's hotel door and found him unconscious on the bed. Sarah's father, a doctor, gave Fred CPR until an ambulance arrived. Dr. Ambrusco had saved Fred's life and he recovered in the hospital. Police found a suicide note in the hotel room in which Fred had wrote, quote, I am a weak person and cannot stand the pain and sorrow any longer. I can't live with all this pressure, end quote. A week after the suicide attempt, Fred held a press conference to address his increasing press scrutiny. He told reporters, quote, after taking some back pain medication, I became very depressed and started to think of the lifestyle that I was losing.
Poor guy.
I know.
Yeah, poor little sap.
Unfortunately, I did something that put my life in danger. I made a bad mistake, end quote. He also maintained his innocence, telling the press, quote, I emphatically deny any involvement in my wife's murder and any suggestion that I might have been involved in any way deeply hurts me, end quote. Joni told Deadly Power that Fred's callous press conference confused the Ambrusco family and they began questioning his involvement in Sarah's killing.
Again, it does revolve around... even just that statement, like what we talk about, is your floater eye okay?
No, I'm like having like, I have something in my eye. It's fine.
I have drops downstairs if you need.
It's like a dry eye. I'm like over here like crying out of one eye. It's fine, Darren.
I got you.
Okay, you got me.
It does seem like how he's reacting to the murder and makes him suspicious automatically.
Yeah, totally. If not Fred, who else would have known that the sliding door was unlocked, that the burglar alarm was turned off, and that Sarah and the boys would be home after 9:30 p.m.?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah.
Authorities then reexamined Fred's alibi from the night of Sarah's slaying. When they arrived at the Alabama prison to interview... What am I saying?
To interview.
Went to interview? What am I emphasizing that for? When they arrived... I'm only looking out of one eye,
dying.
Guys. When they interview...
You're drunk.
I am. I'm drunk and I have one eye. It's really tough. I don't know. It feels like an allergy. Like, you know when you get, like, seasonal allergies, like the pollen?
Sweetie, enough about the allergies.
I know.
Every goddamn
so
day.
Sensitive. Let me try that line again.
Yeah. Interview.
I think we need to...
cut John off.
Just...
possibly euthanize John.
Yeah,
yeah, let's euthanize you.
Something needs to happen here. Anyway, when they arrived at the Alabama prison to interview Fred's client, he said he was surprised when Fred showed up. According to him, he had no idea his attorney wanted to meet with him. He told police they only talked for about 10 minutes, and then Fred left. Police also found out Fred had taken out 3 life insurance policies on Sarah, totaling $1.75 million, just months before her death.
Huh.
Where have we heard this before on the show?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know... let's just say, like, if you're going to kill someone, don't fucking take a life insurance policy.
Literally, you're framing yourself. You are literally framing yourself.
Fucking kill someone.
That's the moral of this story.
Like, obviously, Fred Tokars is like a pretty smart guy.
Right, but
yeah.
Dumbass
people
when it comes
don't
to
think about that.
I know. Well, also, like, after listening to the show, anybody whose spouses have taken out 3 life insurance policies, maybe just check to make sure you're okay.
Yeah, make sure that you guys aren't Ken and Barbie. Like, right. Jesus.
Well, police brought Fred in for questioning once again, but he maintained his innocence. Then, in July 1993, 8 months after Sarah's murder, defense attorneys got Eddie to talk. Eddie testified against Fred and told prosecutors Fred had solicited him to kill Sarah in late 1992. According to Eddie, Fred wanted Sarah dead because, quote, she wanted to divorce him and take everything, end quote. He testified that Fred said, quote, he worked too hard, he went to school at night, and she never did anything. All she ever did was spend his money, and then he wasn't going going to give it to her. He would kill her first, end quote.
Okay.
The former Cobb County DA also said that since Eddie was thousands of dollars in debt to Fred, he owed it to Fred to murder Sarah.
Which does align. That does kind of make sense. Yeah.
When you have, like, you know, favors and things like that because of debt. Eddie also testified that Fred threatened, quote, to destroy Eddie's business if he would not comply, end quote. So now we've got threats and ultimatums. This is not a good scenario. Not wanting to commit the murder himself, Eddie asked around for a hitman until getting in contact with Curtis, whom he offered $5,000 in exchange for killing Sarah.
I'm not sure what's sadder, either the fact that Sarah died in a horrible, horrible death and clearly had a horrible marriage, or that someone only got $5,000 to kill another fucking human being.
Well,
I mean, Jesus,
how desperate these people are.
Christ.
Yeah. Well, on August 25th, 1993, Cobb County authorities, along with the FBI, surrounded Fred's condo with an arrest warrant, rather. Rick and Mike were escorted out safely. Those are the kids, of course. And Fred was arrested without incident. Sarah's family took custody. What am I saying?
Interviewed.
Family interviews. Sarah's family took custody of the boys. Fred was originally charged with racketeering, drug and money laundering violations, according to court documents. He was additionally indicted on counts of murder for hire and conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute cocaine. In 1994, Fred was convicted of federal racketeering and money laundering charges, which included arranging Sarah's murder.
Okay.
He was given life without parole. 3 years later, he was found guilty of murdering his wife. Though prosecutors sought the death penalty, Fred was sentenced to life in prison. After arranging his plea deal, Eddie pleaded guilty to murder and was sentenced to life in prison. He is currently eligible for parole. Rower was also found guilty. Wait, who is Rower? I forget.
Curtis Rower.
Curtis? Yeah, that's what I thought. Was also found guilty of murder and was sentenced to life without parole. Rick told Deadly Power, quote, "I mean, to be honest, I still am a little disappointed that he didn't get the death penalty. And I'm embarrassed that I even have the same genes as him, to be honest," end quote.
That's his fucking, like, son saying that.
I know. That's just tragic all around. Mike said, quote, "You never really move on from something like that, but you learn how to live with it, and it just kind of becomes a part of life," end quote.
I mean, you guys know how I feel about the death penalty. Yeah. I talk about it quite a bit. And even though, and I usually, you know, I subscribe to that because, one, I just think murder is wrong in general, but also, like, what if that person is innocent? And then you find out that the state just sanctioned a killing and they were innocent, which does happen quite a bit.
Yeah.
But even though you know that this guy's guilty, or, you know, we know by a court of law that this guy's guilty, mm-hmm. I still don't think it makes sense to give him the death penalty. Have him rot in fucking prison and suffer the consequences for it.
Well, and especially when you consider a lot of the other sentences we've talked about on this show that don't even closely match up to this.
It seems bad.
But, you know, it's tragic all around. It's sad that these two, I guess now men, don't really have parents in their lives because of this. You know, that's always a tragic story.
It's horrendous, and the fact that she was shot point blank her two boys were around. It's super tragic. Well, and
you know what? Couldn't they have found a time when she wasn't with those boys? I mean,
if the dad did it,
you know,
but if Fred was in charge of doing this, right? If the all thing comes down to Fred, wouldn't he be like, "I don't want my sons there"?
Right, exactly.
Like, so now not only are you like a great husband, but like you're a fucking terrible person. Like,
yeah. I mean, that is beyond. You're right.
He knew they were all together. He knew that.
Yeah.
Well, it's like when people are so obsessed with money like this, nothing else matters. They don't care about anything else.
Him taking three life insurance policy out, I don't think he's thinking like, "I want to be a good
dad." Right.
Like, you know, as we all know, Ken was a really shitty father.
That's true. We all knew
that. Great plastic doll. Shitty fucking father.
That's a great point. Take a drink.
It's just weird, the money thing. If someone said, "Here's $5,000 if you will beat this dog," or something, like, I wouldn't do that.
No.
Of course not.
If it was to beat a reindeer.
Because we're rational people who, you know.
Yeah, we don't have mental illness of any sort.
Exactly.
Right.
There you go.
Well,
let's not go that far, but
let's move on to listener shout outs. Matt is a reindeer.
That's true.
And we continue
who
to
gardens.
Mention it. Who's a reindeer?
# reindeers who garden. Yeah.
Our favorite part of this moment is shouting you guys out. So
definitely.
Nick, not with a K, NIC, mm-hmm. on Twitter says, "Catching up on Martinis and Murder. And I got to say, kudos to At Carpe Darren and At J Thrasher for their valiant attempts at pronouncing those Hawaiian words." And my best friend, who's Hawaiian, did text me and she was like, decent job.
Decent
you
job.
Only messed up like a few of them.
Yeah.
Decent. Like, but that was a compliment coming from. I take it.
I think given our backgrounds and you know how, you know, I've never even been to Hawaii. I think we did a pretty
good job. I'm from New Jersey for fuck's
exactly.
sake. Like, don't expect anything from me.
Thank you, Derek. That's a good point.
Take another drink. Well, I already finished
go.
Mine.
That bitch Kate, which is her
screen
name
not ours
on Twitter. Says,
we're going out on a limb saying that.
There you go. Says hashtag martinis and murder. I am stuck binge listening to the podcast. I have some catching up to do. You guys make my day. I can't count how many times I have fallen asleep listening in. Love, love, love you guys.
Hold on.
What?
Fall asleep listening to us?
I do that with podcasts,
listen,
but I can't imagine falling asleep listening to us. We're
that
screaming
bitch, Kate,
into the
you
microphones.
Got balls, girl. First off, you must have nightmares because you're listening
right.
to me and John's voice
and
Matt's
especially,
which is fucking
yeah.
terrifying. But also, I hope we're not boring.
Right.
Like that, too.
You know what I think it is? A lot of listeners think we're their friends.
Kate, wake up!
Yeah. She's probably...
Kate, are you listening?
Kate, wake up.
Oh, my God.
What do you mean think we're friends? We are their friends.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is
yeah.
like I feel like they're so, we're so comfortable with each other. I really, truly feel like we're all a big family.
We
with
are
this
a big
show.
Family.
Yeah.
Would they love to interview us?
Yes, interview
yes,
us.
Interview. Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you at family dinner.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Bye.